Hey, welcome to Hellbent, a feminist podcast for those who resist and persist. I'm Devin.
I'm Drexel.
And today on the pod, we are going to have a quick State of the Union response since it happened after we recorded last week. And then we also are going to talk about the memo. I'm really, really proud of what I entitled that section, which was release the meh. Fuck it. never mind. Fuck it. Yeah, so it's going to be a good show. Packed show.
I'm excited.
It's always a packed show.
But because we live in a world where everything is just crazy right now.
It's really ridiculous, honestly.
I don't know what to do. Like, I wake up in the morning and I always wait to ask Alexa to give me the flash briefing for the morning.
Right.
Because I don't know
how much I
want to know.
Yeah. Actually, one of my friends, we had a Super Bowl party yesterday. I'm so glad the Eagles won.
Nice. Congrats to those Philly fans.
Yes.
And to those... Sad for those Patriots fans.
I'm not that sad for them.
I'm not that sad
I'm
for
really
them
not.
Either.
But we had a party yesterday, and one of my male friends was over, and we were talking after the game, and we had a really great conversation. And he asked me, with so much going on and such like deeply ingrained systemic sexism, like, how do you get through the day? And I was like, that's an excellent question. And I pointed him to the fact that Emily's List had 16,000 women reach out to run for office, and they're in 2017-2018 sort of election cycle, and their previous record was 2015 to 2016, and there were 920 women. Honestly, to me, that's what helps me get through the day.
That should help us get through 2018.
I mean, yeah,
2020.
Hopefully, we do have midterms coming up. That's the other thing. Vote them out.
I know. I mean, I was just listening to a podcast that was talking about Devin Nunes. And, you know, that's a hard district here in California. But we have an opportunity, you know, that's 8 Republican
seats
in California alone.
Right.
And we only need a handful, like
right.
Something like 17, 20, less than 20.
I know. And California's pissed.
Yeah.
So, you know.
But there's some crazy, like, how did we get Stephen Miller, Dana Rohrabacher,
yeah.
And Devin Nunes all out of California?
I don't know. It's a really great question. And Stephen Miller is from Santa Monica.
Exactly.
Which is like a liberal bastion if I've ever seen one. So that's really...
Somebody hurt him. not physically hurt him. But I just meant like...
Yeah.
Somebody in his lifetime.
Right.
Some liberal,
there is something.
Some liberal girl made fun of him.
Right. Right. That's always what it
and
is.
And she was Hispanic.
And he was so in love with her.
And he was so in love with her. And then he turned on a dime.
I've been trying to eat less takeout. And now the Indian restaurant down the street from my house really misses me. But my husband and I have started making Sunbasket meals twice a week. And we can even get our 3-year-old to eat them. Sometimes. And that's a win. And today, Hellions can get $35 off your first order when you go to sunbasket.com/hellbent. Sunbasket's menu is positively mouth-watering. I'm talking organic produce, responsibly raised meat, sustainably sourced fish, and so on and so on. And it's all personalized. Sunbasket lets you mix and match from paleo, lean and clean, gluten-free, vegan, vegetarian, anything that you want. I'm really excited. I just got my shipment. There's some really bomb chicken waiting for me tonight. And most importantly for me, each delicious, easy recipe is ready in about 30 minutes, which is great because I definitely do not start dinner prep until I'm so hungry that I'm tempted to eat the ingredients raw. So go to sunbasket.com/hellbent today to learn more and get $35 off your first order. That's sunbasket.com/hellbent for $35 off. sunbasket.com/hellbent.
All right, Devin, let's get into some listener feedback.
Yes. So first up, I got an email from a listener named Andrew, and it was in reference to the January 20th, where we talked about grand jury proceedings.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, quote, "A big fan of what you're doing with the podcast. I haven't finished yet, but I wanted to shoot you 2 notes before I forget. 1, grand jurors are bound by federal rules to maintain secrecy, as are government attorneys. However, witnesses, 99% positive, would need to double check, are not bound to secrecy, so that is a frequent source of leaks in general." And then he gave us a general guide to sourcing leaks in news publications on Lawfare blog, which is great. And he said, in most cases, it's usually the defense bar, the lawyers for the defense, or congressional staff who leak information, as their penalties for leaking most information is either non-existent or more limited than a DOJ lawyer unlawfully leaking info. In the case of the McGahn story, where McGahn looks like a hero, he or his staff were likely at least one of the sources. So I thought that was great. And as I like to say, I'm not a lawyer.
Thanks, Andrew. I feel like I mixed up the jurors versus right. the witnesses last week. So I definitely remember, now that it's jogging my memory, right. hearing witnesses over
yeah.
the jurors.
Yeah. So I'm not a lawyer. I don't even play one on this podcast. So I really appreciate when our listeners jump in.
I learn all of my law from Law and Order, a Special Victims Unit.
Me too. Weird.
So weird. Yeah.
And then we had some feedback. Love her.
Love her.
So we had some feedback from you, Drexel, about Thursday's show.
I did. You had really great interview with Liz Winstead last week. I just had when I was going through the interview, I actually had to rewind because she was during the interview, she was talking about candidates who were, you know, who had reached out, who were very interested in running for office and how they kind of decide what candidates to endorse, what candidates to pick up. And she was saying, you know, kind of criteria, and she was saying it really fast. And at one point she said, you know, we've got candidates, we're looking at candidates that are pro-choice and pro-abortion and da da da. And then I was like, I had to rewind because the pro-abortion part of it was so, it was said so fast.
Right.
So I'm always really interested. And I definitely want to hear what everybody else thinks, and especially you, Devin, if people believe there is a difference between pro-choice and pro-abortion, because that can get in conversation really interesting.
Yeah.
Because like, I, at least, you know, I think everybody on this podcast who listens to this podcast, or and especially us, you know, obviously believe in a woman's right to choose and make decisions about her own body. On the other side of that, I also believe that that's probably one of the hardest decisions for a woman to make.
Right.
And so I don't know that, at least in my head,
right.
I don't know that there are people who would want to have to make that decision,
right.
who make it a pro
right.
thing,
right.
as opposed to I'm in this situation
and I need to make
and
a choice.
I need to make the decision that's best for me, my
right.
body, and my child and my family, basically.
Right.
But do you think there is a difference between the two,
well,
or is there not? And I'm just making.
Well, no. To my understanding and the way I think about it is being pro-abortion is more about being pro-abortion as regular healthcare and not stigmatizing it and not removing it from the narrative of other types of healthcare. Some women need abortion as part of their healthcare, just like some women need birth control or some women need knee replacements or some women don't need a pelvic exam because they don't have a uterus. So I think for me, pro-abortion isn't so much pro a woman getting an abortion in every case. I think it's just removing the stigma from abortion, and your pro-abortion in terms of it's a valid option and it shouldn't be a whole separate debate from healthcare. That's how I understand it.
Right.
And in the 90s with Clinton, and that sort of brand of the left, there was a saying, abortion should be legal, safe, and rare. Right. That was like the line. It was the legal, safe, and rare. People
right.
said that all the time. And I mean, to that end, I agree. I think it is a horrendous choice, and I would never assume to make that choice for a woman, whether to get an abortion or not. But I do think that, you know, saying it should be rare adds shame and stigma to something that happens.
Right. Do you think that just based on how Lynn talked about candidates that they were looking at, do you think that could a Republican or a or even a moderate Democrat who leans more towards the middle to the right than a normal Democrat like a Heidi Heitkamp or, you know,
right.
or somebody would pick up on that
right.
and use that to their advantage, even just that one phrase.
Right.
And I would be, as a campaign manager, if I was one, I feel like I would be very cautious about
right.
about having a candidate be like, I'm pro-abortion.
Right.
Because then that, I feel like that could have some, that could cause a little bit more problems down the road.
It sounds different than pro-choice.
And I feel like maybe we just find another, another way to say that.
I think it is a little different than pro-choice when you're talking about it. And on this podcast, we believe in precision of language and not softening the discourse and all that good stuff. But I will say that maybe pro-abortion isn't the term that would get used politically.
Right.
But I do think that it's aiming to dismantle some of the built-in stigma and shame around abortion by taking it out of the normal course of healthcare. It's like it's a separate thing. And I don't think it should be. I think abortion care is a part of healthcare. And so in that respect, I consider myself to be pro-abortion.
Got it.
Yeah. Not Understood. That I think all women should get abortions, more that I think abortion shouldn't be something so taboo and stigmatized.
Yeah. Maybe Democrats should make that a part of the
like
the mantra. Like explain it better to people where people understand. Because I do think that there are a lot of conservatives who might, especially conservative women, because women are women. And, and everybody understands what they have to go through.
Right.
And I think it might be, if we explain things, and we talk about this all the time,
messaging.
At least I talk about messaging all the time. If we found a better way to message that, that pro-choice, pro-life, pro-abortion conversation, we would be in a better, we would have the advantage.
I agree.
Because we are both morally, better than the other side.
Right. So I thought that was a really interesting conversation.
Yeah, I texted her out of the blue and I was like, I'm really interested in this.
Yeah, it was great. It was great.
On the treadmill at the gym.
the best ideas.
That's where I do my best thinking.
As on the treadmill, obviously. A few quick updates. So Sarah is having a really tough week. She texted me. So there's not going to be a Sarah's Shouty Soapbox this week. To everyone's dismay, we're all very disappointed. And there's not going to be a Patreon soapbox either, but researcher extraordinaire Varsha and I will be doing a special Patreon episode together this week about what the hell is going on at HHS. It's a topic that I've wanted to cover on the show for weeks, but it's always gotten bumped because of bullshit released the memo and the State of the Union. And I totally get it, but there's a lot of weird shit going on at HHS and I definitely want to talk about it. So
I'm excited to hear that.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I have, we're winding down the political beat, my other podcast soon. So I'll have another announcement in the coming weeks about where I'm going. Yes. And so, you know, I know that we don't get a chance to, because we're so wrapped up in Russia and government shutdown, which I know we're not talking about today, but that's happening within the next week.
3 days.
That's like this weekend, but like, snooze. seriously, like, okay.
Yeah,
like, we've gone through this rodeo before. So that's going to be a really good conversation.
Yeah. And then last, please subscribe and rate us 5 stars on iTunes. It warms our cold feminist hearts here at Hellbent HQ, and it helps more people find the show, and it complies with Section 8, Subsection J of the Rules of Feminism.
I believe it. I read it. That's how I got on this podcast. I had to understand the Rules of Feminism. I had to get that book.
The book.
Amazon.
Okay, Drexel, so we recorded last week before the State of the Union happened.
Right, the day before.
The day before.
Dang it.
I know. So we wanted to give a little response to the State of the Union, and there's so much to pick apart there. It was a hot pile of garbage mess.
Yeah, it was. I know a lot of people didn't want to watch it because they didn't want to give Trump the ratings.
Right.
It was the one of the, it was like in the middle of, you know, the viewership.
Right.
Even though Donald Trump said that it was the highest. I don't know why. Like, who told him that?
I know.
I just want to know who's giving him this information.
Right.
Somebody is doing a disservice to him.
This is such verifiable information.
Exactly.
I just don't get it. I've just never understood it.
And why does he find it acceptable for them to give him misinformation?
I don't know.
I just don't understand that those type of people that. Anyway.
Right.
What did you think?
Well.
From like your initial thoughts of the whole thing.
Okay. So I didn't watch it. I read it. I read the transcript.
That's good. I actually told somebody that. Somebody said, had not watched it. And they said, what should I do? I said, pick up the go on thewhitehouse.gov,
right.
Find the transcript
and read it.
And read it. Yeah. Actually, don't find the White House transcript. No. Find it somewhere else, because the NPR. White House transcript will change shit.
Exactly.
And they'll and words, and they'll be like, I never said that Americans right. are dreamers, and then that's
and then that's
a whole other thing.
Yeah, I read it on NPR, and it was super helpful. They had like little annotations from experts that gave neutral, basically fact checks on the fly, which was really interesting. I thought. We all knew he was going to take a victory lap on the economy, even though he can't take credit for that, but whatever. I was really struck by the language he used around immigration. And I knew it was going to be hardline, and I knew he was going to be an asshat about it, but he was reading off the teleprompter, so he wasn't on his usual stuttering, make no sense. And so to hear it so clearly, to hear these thoughts so clearly, the thoughts of Stephen Miller, who had a major hand in writing this in this piece of garbage, it was disquieting.
It was really interesting, because I know there's a lot of there was a lot in this speech that should worry the global everybody across the globe, but on the immigration piece, first, I wrote a piece in Medium called No Dipshit, You're Not a Dreamer. So check that out if you haven't already.
It's really good.
It's a quick read. So, but it was the only part of the State of the Union that spoke about, because there was no new policy initiative in his speech.
Right.
But it gave a clearer look at the Trump policy on where they think they're headed,
right?
With this four pillars,
right?
So it kind of like in the past, if you listen to past Obama speeches or you listen to past Bush speeches, I'm talking about this generation because we only lived really through these last two presidents, and some of Clinton. We've seen that type of layout before,
right?
And so they just had the immigration conversation last week, you know, and so for Donald Trump to come out with these four pillars that he knows and that Stephen Miller knows and that John Kelly, for the most part, knows, because everybody thinks that it's Stephen Miller that's pushing this stuff. It's also John Kelly at the same time.
I know. I remember when we talked about that and you were saying that, and I was like, yeah, you're right. Right. I hadn't really even considered that.
People forget he's the man behind the curtain as well. And so for them to put out policy that they know that's just not going to pass,
right,
is a little moronic.
It is. and to the language part of it too, because he's putting out this policy that he knows is basically crap and it's never going to make its way through the House or the Senate. I think that's clear.
It
might make its way through the House. That's true.
They would just vote along party lines.
Right.
The Senate, however, would never let this through.
It would never happen.
And that's part of the, because the Senate's not going to use these rules. They're like hardline rules. They're nuclear options on something that like this. It's a political football that they don't want to go into the 2018 elections with.
Absolutely.
But it goes back to something that I said last week or a couple episodes ago, which is that Americans typically don't vote about immigration issues.
Right.
Non folks that are not affected personally by immigration issues typically don't really think about it. And so we have to start thinking about going into this election, making this issue one of the number one issues over the next few months, not for us, but for friends and neighbors and our doctors. I mean, we saw that doctor out of Michigan get pulled out. So that's something that I certainly challenge everybody to think about when they're having those conversations with their representatives, not necessarily about just about Russia, obviously, or the economy. Obviously, those are bread and butter issues that we can talk about to the end of time. But this is something that Republicans are going to hammer if they win in 2018. And if they win in 2018, it will just get worse.
Yes, it absolutely will. And what I found really disgusting was he opened the discussion on immigration basically with the part of the speech where he says immigrants are coming to kill you, right? He starts with the MS-13.
It was like his first speech ever, his announcement speech.
Oh, God, Mexicans are rapists?
Right, I mean, and murderers and killers. And that whole MS-13 bit, was really interesting because I remember live tweeting and saying, reminding people that MS-13 has nothing to do with their, essentially the goal was to tie dreamers
to violent gangs. Right. MS-13.
Right. And it's like, that's not true.
Right. Right. And then he takes that whole story of the two girls who were killed by the MS-13 gang, again, trying to relate it back to the dreamers.
That was so watching that, the visual of that, because first of all, what they tried to do for folks that watched it, mm-hmm. because that they tried to pit black people against Hispanics in that visual.
Right. Right.
By bringing in a family of African Americans whose daughters were killed by MS-13 to try to drive a wedge,
right.
Not going to happen, between black people just don't think about
right.
Hispanics like that. Like, right. That's not a thing.
Right.
And
it's
so,
not the first time Trump and the Trump administration has tried to do that either.
Right.
You're talking about black unemployment and employment and saying we need to create better jobs.
Right.
They're being taken by immigrants.
Right.
Using that.
And it's not a mess. It's falling on deaf ears because
right.
I can tell you. You know, being black and all, that that
wait, oh my God, wait, are you black?
You know,
are you trying to tell me you're black?
This entire time, you know, black folks just aren't thinking like that,
right? Right,
and so we know who's taking the jobs,
right?
And it's not, you know, our other brown
right
folks.
He uses the term chain migration all the time, and he really made that central to his speech. In terms of chain migration, and he actually tied chain migration, which is an offensive term, but not a legal one, I would like to point out. Right. He's tying this idea of chain migration to terrorism. So he's moving from sort of tying dreamers to violent gangs to tying chain migration, which is family reunification, to terrorism. And these sort of false equivalencies are not just gaslighty bullshit. But it's also, the language is just kind of heart-stopping when you stop. And reading it, I think, made it even starker.
Right.
Like, when you're reading an essay and you can see where you're trying to make connections and you're trying to tie two things together, maybe when you're listening, it's not so obvious. But when you read an essay, it's clear when people are trying to tie two points together.
What I found to be interesting in that immigration spot is that a few moments later, he talked about that North Korean defector.
Right.
Which falls under immigration in a sense.
Right.
So how, the only reason that they put a North Korean defector in the Capitol was to enrage the North Koreans.
Right.
But it's not something that, I think that Democrats have to do a better job of explaining immigration outside of just Hispanics.
I completely agree. I also found it interesting, and I want to get back to your point, but before I forget, he's talking about South Korea accepting a North Korean defector with asylum, which is something that Trump is unwilling to do.
Right.
In our country.
Right.
He's saying this man was so brave and he defected and he went to South Korea and South Korea accepted him. And so the narrative I got from there is that South Korea welcomed asylum seekers, which is not policy that Trump is trying to implement himself.
Exactly.
So why use that story?
Right. And the other part of that is that the vice president will be in Pyeongchang on Thursday.
Right.
Which is the start of the Winter Olympics. And I read an article in Axios the other day that said, the headline was like, Vice President Pence looking to disrupt the normalization of North Korea being a part of the Winter Olympics. This, what we saw at the State of the Union, seemed to be the start of that.
Right.
For them to bring that up, you know, after North Korea and South Korea are already entering under one flag at the Olympics, that was nothing but an attempt to drive a wedge in between those two countries,
right,
to try to start something else. Because, of course, this administration is feeling left out of the, you know, the stuff that they're moving forward with.
Right. And it for a administration that is touting this America First dog whistle bullshit, They seem to be super interested in stirring up shit in other countries.
Right. It's because they want to break something so they can fix it. The other part of the State of the Union was the... He talked about African-American unemployment numbers, which was really... was a lie. and back to that, it was another piece of... Donald Trump believes that African-Americans will be on his side for some reason. Right. Republicans believe that African-Americans will vote for them for some reason.
Right.
And that's not the case.
It's historically not the case.
Did they not see the numbers in Alabama? 98% is not good. 90 anything is not good for any demographic.
Once you're in the 90 range, you're fucked.
Right. And it's not going to say, for example, Donald Trump convinced a handful of African Americans to vote for him or to vote for the Republican policies. They'll only drop by 5 or 10%.
Right.
That's still in the high 80s.
You're still fucked.
You still screw with black folks.
Right.
And so, to say that African American unemployment stands at the lowest rate ever recorded, and to say that Hispanic American unemployment has reached the... Okay. First of all, they say that Hispanic Americans are taking away jobs, yet still tout Hispanic unemployment being at the lowest levels in history.
In the
Which
same
one
breath.
Is it? What do you want from us? Tell me.
It's so true.
But it's so interesting. I had an old friend of mine from North Carolina reach out to me last night. He said, because I made a comment, I think, about the 2018 election and the Eagles winning and it being a foreshadowing about the 2018 midterms. And this is what we should be looking at. And he sent me a DM and he just said, I live in one of the poorest cities in the country. And, a lot of these people are taking our jobs. I said, well, they're not really taking your jobs.
Right.
That's not how it works. And I went on to explain, this. And then we had a good discussion and he appreciated it or whatever. But black folks know that Donald Trump is not the reason unemployment numbers are so low.
No.
And I think that the other part of that, and again, Democrats need to go out there and Nancy Pelosi and I at this point, I would even take Bernie Sanders' help.
Please, anyone.
Explain. That's the thing about Bernie Sanders that makes me really mad is that for somebody that spent a whole Facebook live event to talk about the State of the Union, for him not to talk to African Americans extensively about why black unemployment is so low because of the policies of the previous administration. He's not going to give Barack Obama credit, which he never did during the entire primary last year. So why would he it's his job as outreach chair, whatever the fuck he is, to make that, I don't know what he does anymore, to make that argument, which is the stock market being as high as it is has no effect on unemployment. The Dow dropping and going up and down has no effect on jobs.
Right.
How Democrats have not gone out there, every time that Donald Trump says something and says, nope, that's a lie. Unemployment has nothing or the stock market, Wall Street has nothing to do with your job.
Right.
We know that. We spent an entire campaign last year railing against Wall Street and the 1%, not just the Democrats, but those in middle America who understand that, who are looking at Wall Street and banks, who looked at Hillary Clinton and said that she's a Wall Street crony. Sean Hannity and the rest of the Republican, Tucker Carlson, all those people talking about Hillary Clinton's ties to Wall Street, but then touting the stock market as an indicator for job growth is insane to me.
And also what's really interesting about that is, last point before we move on, is that Trump took this victory lap.
And clapped for himself.
And clapped
several times.
he took this victory lap about the economy and saying the stock market is up so high when in fact this week it tumbled another 2% or whatever. The interesting thing about a high stock market is that when that happens, the Federal Reserve, the Fed, get a kind of an itchy trigger finger because the Fed's whole job is, the Daily put it really well this morning, the Fed's whole job is to take the punch bowl away when the party gets going. So So when the economy gets too big and too high and the stock market goes too well, the Fed wants to track inflation and keep inflation low, so it will raise interest rates.
Exactly. I just got an email about that the other day.
So you know, when he's tying the economy and job growth and economy in terms of everyday Americans, if you will, to the stock market, it's actually, in a lot of cases, the exact inverse. Because now the Fed steps in and says, well, we're doing really well, so we need to kind of slow the party down. That coupled with his overtly, well, I won't say overtly racist. I think it was more dog whistle racism on the immigration. Right. And
that was a base. That was a tickle the fancy of the base.
Exactly. And just this very divisive language when he's, the words are, we're trying to go for unity, and the tone is divisiveness. All of that together really just makes the State of the Union, it's not going to age well. Let's put it that way.
Right.
Okay, Drexel. So let's do block three. Hashtag release them. You know what? Fuck it. This memo was such a self-own.
I was so disappointed.
Me too.
Right after we got the notification that the memo was being released, I immediately went, the Washington Post sent out a thing, Politico sent out a thing. I went to them, I wanted to read it, and I was so disappointed.
Yeah.
I was really, like, as a political scientist,
yes.
I was hoping that, like, part of me was like, okay, give me something really juicy.
Right.
Like, I want this to either crack the shit out of something or just be, I really wanted it to crack the shit out of something, yeah, so that Democrats would have to respond to it.
Right,
like,
right.
Like, and fight for it.
Yeah.
And then I was like, well, that's it?
Yeah. All of this
was for shit that we'd heard before?
Yeah, yeah. It's like a lot of foreplay for really bad sex.
Yeah, which Republicans, I mean, that's the way they do it. Literally.
Literally.
Missionary style. We got a missionary style memo.
That's exactly what it is.
Exactly what this is. A 3.5-page missionary style memo.
Yeah.
That was the 12 font size, an Arial font.
Like huge margins.
Right. And like a half space between each sentence.
I mean, it's ridiculous. Well, so this memo was ridiculous, and it was such, they discredited themselves in the last paragraph. They discredited the entire memo in the last paragraph. So what they said, the whole point of this memo, the whole thesis of this memo was that the FISA warrants against Carter Page were basically partisan, that they were based on the Steele dossier. They didn't disclose that the Steele dossier had been paid for by this law firm representing DNC interests. And that was basically what they were saying.
They might as well have written that the law firm was Clinton and Associates.
Seriously. I mean, that's really what they were.
That's what they wanted.
That's what they wanted. But the very end, and I'm going to read this verbatim, the very end, quote, the Papadopoulos information. So they haven't mentioned George Papadopoulos in this entire memo, mm-hmm, until the last four sentences. So Papadopoulos, who pleaded guilty to lying to the FBI and has pleaded guilty with Mueller and is considered to be a cooperating witness by Mueller, said the Papadopoulos information triggered the opening of an FBI counterintelligence investigation in late July 2016 by FBI agent Peter Strzok. And Peter Strzok is also the guy with the text messages.
Right.
So that's a whole
different society.
Secret society, very odd. But let me read that again. Quote, the Papadopoulos information triggered the opening of an FBI counterintelligence investigation in late July 2016.
I'm actually surprised they didn't put that in the footnote.
Right.
I mean, so they probably would have been better off had it been very small at the bottom.
Right.
Like an asterisk in the somewhere.
Right. In the footnote with another asterisk, right, to like another footnote.
Right.
So that sentence completely nullifies the rest of this memo.
Yeah.
And that's what I found so fascinating about it, is that they went through all the trouble of writing out like very detailed lists with like sub bullet points. They name checked David Korn, like from Mother Jones.
Right.
I mean, all of these things, they talk about how the Carter Page warrants were opened in October of 2016, but the investigation was triggered in July 2016 by Papadopoulos.
And the other part of that that I want people to remember is that, first of all, Donald Trump tweeted out right after this thing came out that this memo totally vindicates him. It absolutely does not. Because if you remember, first of all, Robert Mueller was not in the special counsel at the time that the FBI started any of this.
Right.
So these are two separate things. And I think that's where Paul Ryan coming out the day before the memo was released, saying these are two separate things. This is how Paul Ryan tried to like tiptoe around everything by saying, I want the memo released to appease Trump to save himself from
ridicule.
Not being a treasonous like Devin Nunes, which I'm thinking about writing a Devin Nunes is a traitor article. So watch out for that. So Robert Mueller was, these two things are separate. The other thing that I know that I was looking down conservative Twitter, which I try not to do because it's like,
it's like
reading the Yahoo message, like the comment section.
Right.
Like you just don't know what you're going to get.
Yeah, just don't do it.
But a lot of conservatives, and I feel like they got it from Sean Hannity, talked about who the FISA judge was.
Yes.
Who was an Obama appointee to the circuit court.
Right.
However, the FISA judges are appointed by the Chief Justice.
Right. Right.
A Republican. And so that didn't help Trump out any, that or at least conservatives out any in that argument. They're certainly not going to be like, oh, well, Chief Justice John Roberts, you know, appointed this guy. But I think I don't know if at this point they really like Chief Justice John Roberts because he's doing some things that they don't really like.
Well, right.
Right. The other part of that is that the FISA warrants have to be renewed.
Every 90 days.
Every 90 days.
Also, hi, FISA warrants are not like regular warrants.
Right.
They don't.
They're not SVU warrants.
No, they're not like
Ice Cube is not walking in
into like a judge's house and being like, sign this.
Exactly.
Then, that's not how this process works. It takes dozens, if not more, people to certify, vet, rework, verify, and then write the FISA warrant where they bring it to the judge who then repeats that process all over again.
Right.
And then in another 90 days, they have to do it all over again.
So if you're really following or if you've been following all of this, when the FISA warrant first came out, it was under the direction of the Attorney General at the time, Loretta Lynch, and
Deputy AG
Sally Yates.
Sally goddamn Yates.
Yep. And then the FBI director at the time, who was Jim Comey. The other part of that, so then fast forward to the Trump administration coming in. And so Republicans this entire time have been talking about this Obama administration trying to the deep state of the Obama administration, not realizing that 90 days later, the same warrant was extended by Trump appointees.
Right. But I think that was the point, though, is they're saying that Rod Rosenstein recertified this in bad faith and they want to fire him.
Right. But that by that point, I don't remember. And somebody might correct me if I'm wrong. I don't think that the Attorney General, Jeff Sessions, had recused himself by that point.
Right.
So he knew.
Right.
That, like, I think you might be right. And if this is like, you know, like first week stuff.
Right.
This is stuff like, hey, this person's under investigation. So it's not like the Attorney General didn't know. So he had to be like, oh, shit. But Trump didn't. He didn't tell Trump that they had done this because why?
Right.
And then it makes it look like Rod Rosenstein became the one that eventually signed off on another 90 days. And then Christopher Wray, the FBI director at the time, again, signed off on this, who ended up coming out with a statement, I think Saturday, to all FBI employees, reminding them that he has their back and that the American people have their back. And so they should continue doing their jobs. I feel like we should use FISA in a good acronym. I need somebody to come up with that.
Hellions deploy.
Deploy.
A lot of this memo, like we were just saying, really hinged on this idea that the FISA warrant was somehow a part of Obama's deep state conspiracy to thwart the Trump campaign. Again, it's not totally clear because this memo doesn't make a ton of sense. But what I found really interesting is that it not only sort of went after the FISA judge, it also went after the FISA process. You know, they're saying that it wasn't vetted properly, that the information presented, it wasn't told that the Steele dossier was paid for by the Clinton campaign or a law firm associated with the Clinton campaign. So what they also said is that...
Which apparently was a lie.
It is a lie.
Which apparently they told the judge, like, this is something that... Yeah.
Right. They totally said that. But they said that they didn't. And also, like, please cite your work, said every ninth grade English teacher ever. Like, the thing about this memo is that it is completely pulled out of context.
Here's what I want to know, because we're talking about this stupid memo, but the Democrats also have a memo that's coming out.
Right.
If similar information in this unclassified memo is already out, what is in, I would argue, what is in the Democrats' memo that is classified
right
under the... purview of everything that was unclassified already. So couldn't they just, if they're rebutting the unclassified memo,
right,
they could just release it. They could just pull a Dianne Feinstein and just release it.
Be like, yeah, bitch, here
we go. Exactly. So I don't understand why they're waiting, why they have to go through this process again.
Well, this goes back to...
unless there's something that's...
Well, and there might be something we don't know, which happens a lot in politics, especially when it comes to intelligence. There's often hurdles we don't see, we'll never understand. And I also think this points back a little bit to... Democrats are playing cards while Republicans have set the house on fire.
Right.
You know, Democrats want to play within the rules, and Republicans are like, I'm going to light this bitch on fire.
Right. But I feel like that once they vote on, because declassifying, Trey Gowdy already came out and said that he thinks it should be released. Paul Ryan said he thinks it should be released. So all of these Republicans are coming out saying that this Democratic memo should be released. But then it still has to kick up to Trump, who has final say on whether or not it gets released. Like, why would the person under investigation
get to decide? Right. Because it's so obvious in this memo, if you read it, the information feels very cherry picked. It's taken completely out of context. It's not sourced.
But it's not even cherry picked information. It's information that we had already heard.
That's also true.
It is information that we heard from conservatives every day. I feel like I have heard all of that information every day. That's why I was disappointed.
There wasn't anything new. Right. Yeah, that was also interesting because as insofar that FISA warrants are secret, everybody seemed to know that Carter Page was under FISA warrant wiretapping.
We knew that last year.
Well, that's what I'm saying. And so if it's supposed to be so secret, obviously everyone knew.
I want to know what was so classified in that memo.
Right. That they felt they couldn't.
Exactly.
Because they didn't release the underlying source material, the underlying intelligence to support any of these claims.
But apparently what Donald Trump got, which is the memo that we received,
right,
was altered the day before being sent to the White House
right
by Devin Nunes right in the dark of night, like he's Darkwing Duck or something.
I really want Devin Nunes to be Darkwing Duck for Halloween.
But forever. That might be an insult to Darkwing Duck, because I did love that show.
I did too. Well, I mean, something like, okay, it says, again, quoting, Deputy Director McCabe of the FBI testified before the committee in December.
Former Deputy Director McCabe.
I know.
McCabe.
Well,
at this point.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
He testified before the committee in December 2017 and said that no surveillance warrant would have been sought from the FISC without the Steele dossier information, to which I say, I couldn't find a transcript of that. That's because it happened behind closed doors. And so you're telling me that in this bullshit memo without releasing any of the underlying documentation to prove it. You could literally be pulling things out of your butthole, which is what I strongly assume that they're doing.
Right. And I was listening to some clips of Hannity before I came in the studio. And Hannity always likes to talk about, and Republicans and conservatives and Trump supporters always like to talk about, where there's no evidence of collusion. Well, of course we would know the evidence. We're not the ones investigating. Right. Just because you haven't heard about the evidence.
Do I look like Bob Mueller to you?
Exactly.
Like, I love Bob Mueller, but I don't want to look like
him. He has not come out and given a press conference.
Right.
He's not giving you the evidence. So every time Republicans go out there and say there's no evidence, I strongly implore Democrats to counter that with, Rob Mueller will present his evidence, the actual evidence,
When he's ready.
Why they're not doing that is beyond me.
Oh,
Trey Gowdy this weekend on one of this like CBS Morning or whatever that he
one
was on
shows,
this weekend
morning
said
shows.
He has full faith that Bob Mueller should and will continue this investigation and we will get the answers that we need.
I mean, when Trey Gowdy says it, you know.
Of all people. Even though he's not running. He can say this shit now.
Right.
Because he's not running for re-election.
I know. When you say you're not running for re-election, you all of a sudden become the no fucks version of yourself.
Right. You're like, what happened to that guy?
Whoa. I give no fucks now.
Devin Nunes is running for re-election. So those in the Central Valley of California, if
please
you're listening,
vote.
Get out there and vote. Or run yourself.
I just want to say one last thing about this memo before we move on, because it cracked me the hell up. In the second paragraph of the declassified memo, I'm going to read the whole sentence verbatim, which I've done a lot today, apparently. Quote, on October 21st, 2016, DOJ and FBI sought and received a FIA probable cause order authorizing electronic surveillance on Carter Page from the FISC. Page is a U.S. citizen who served as a volunteer advisor to the Trump presidential campaign. Page is a U.S. citizen who served as a volunteer advisor to the Trump presidential campaign. That is in the memo. That is in the beginning of the memo. So, like, the people who get bored and stop reading after, you know, two paragraphs, right, already saw it. And that, to me, is just such an obvious clue that a lot of this information and a lot of this memo was actually, so, like, originated in the White House. Because Trump loves calling his former staffers, quote, volunteers when all of a sudden they get in hot water.
Exactly. Like, I think Devin Nunes this weekend in an interview said that Donald Trump had never met with George Papadopoulos.
There's a picture.
Bitch, we had a picture.
There's a fucking picture.
Bitch, we saw them. He was two seats down from him.
I know.
He could touch him if he reached out his long, swarmy hands.
I know. So, you know, I think on top of everything else, something that didn't get talked about a ton was the fact that there's this rumor that some of this originated in the White House and it was created in order to further the White House's causes. And if there's no better indication, it is who served as a volunteer advisor to the Trump presidential campaign. We got really lucky when we set out to find a research assistant. Varsha fell right into our laps and is absolutely amazing. We literally couldn't do the show without her. Oftentimes, though, it's not easy to find the person you need to run your business. Not everyone can just find a Varsha. ZipRecruiter knew there was a smarter way, so they built a platform that finds the right job candidates for you. ZipRecruiter learns what you're looking for, identifies people with the right experience, and invites them to apply to your job. And these invitations have revolutionized how you find your next hire. In fact, 80% of employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site in just one day. That's really fast to find your Varsha. And ZipRecruiter doesn't stop there. They even spotlight the strongest applications you receive so you never miss a great match. The right candidates are out there. ZipRecruiter is how you find them. You know, the Trump administration might go through fewer people in top cabinet positions if they use this site. I don't know. I'm just saying. Businesses of all size trust ZipRecruiter for their hiring needs. And right now, Hellions can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/hellbent. That's ZipRecruiter.com/hellbent. ZipRecruiter.com/hellbent. ZipRecruiter. The smartest way to hire.
All right, Devin, it is time for some gratitude check.
Yes, my favorite. No, I'm kidding. Dick Watt is my favorite, but this is a really good. This is really good too. So I'm grateful. I feel like I haven't had a ton of political gratitude checks in a while, but a lot's been happening personally. And last Wednesday was January 31st, and it was the 1 year anniversary of the Hellbent launch.
Woo woo!
I know. It has been quite a year. And as we come up on our 100th episode, which we're going to do something special for our 100th episode, we're releasing episode 90 today. I mean, I'm just blown away to the response to this idea that Sarah and I had at a frou-frou brunch place in Santa Monica in January of 2017. Stephen Miller was not there. He can't sit with us. He needs to go away. I mean, we've interviewed some of the most interesting people in politics, and we've had these discussions that have really helped us grow as feminists and as people. And it's been a year, And I can't believe it's been an entire year and that we've created such an archive of content in that time, because apparently we don't understand how this works. And we were just like, yeah, let's do twice a week. Let's go. And, you know, it's been such a great ride. And I'm getting a little emotional because 1 year, 90 episodes later, this has been the best thing I've ever done with my time.
Nice. Yeah. Congratulations.
Thank you. To you both. I'm very excited.
And to all the listeners, of course.
Yes. So, Drexel, what are you grateful for?
Well, on the heels of that, I said it the other day with, I posted about your guys' 1 year anniversary and last year, I don't know how I stumbled upon the pod.
Yeah.
I don't know how it all happened, but it all happened very fast.
It did. And Sarah was on your show.
So I think that's what happened. Sarah had tweeted something, and then I reached out to her and I said, hey, why don't you come on the show? And she was like, great. And then it all snowballed from there.
I know.
And so obviously I think this week, my gratitude check is to you and Sarah for, bringing me a part of this family that you guys have created and this welcome that your fans have had over these past few weeks has been tremendous. And I've had a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And looking forward to, the next 100.
I know. Oh, God. That just exhausts me to hear.
Right. But because the resistance does not stop, we got a lot of work to do, and I'm excited to continue this partnership.
Yeah. And I made a new friend.
Yes.
I know, we met through this and now we're friends.
And I came to her birthday party.
You were at my birthday party.
Yeah.
So that had Panda catered.
Guys, it was the best.
I know.
And I had this bartender was there and he made this like smoky drink in a box.
He like filled it with smoke.
It was literally lit a match and filled it with smoke. And I was like, oh, I'll taste it. It was really good.
It was good. It was weird, but it was good.
It was good. I didn't get a chance to do the palm reader though.
Oh, yeah.
I wanted to know.
I know.
We need the Hollywood medium.
I know. I really want.
We need Tyler. All right, Devin. Who is our dickwad of the week?
I love how Drexel announces that. I actually asked him specifically to do it. We have one main one. But first, I just want to give a special Dickwad of the Week shout out to our friend, Devin Nunes.
Congressman from the California 22nd, Central Valley, if you're listening.
Congratulations on being a huge asshat.
Yes. We do, maybe do Dickwad of the Week and Asshat of the Week. Like that's the junior version right. of Dickwad of the right. Week.
Congratulations. You're a dick.
You're
but our loser, dishonorable mention of this week, is Paul Ryan.
Nice.
Which he hasn't been Dickwad in a while.
Congratulations, Paul Ryan.
I know. He hasn't been Dickwad in a while. He's definitely been a dick.
Just not dickwad of the week.
Yeah, not that bad. We've had some pretty bad apples recently. But it's nice to welcome him back into the fray. Speaker Paul D. Ryan of Wisconsin faced...
Paul Dickwad Ryan.
I didn't even put that together.
Oh, yes. Lord.
Somebody's mama knew. So he tweeted on Saturday about this tax reform that he's been apparently dreaming about since college-age Paul
Doing
Ryan, right, had wet dreams about tax reform. So he pointed to a secretary at a public school who had tweeted about $1.50 weekly increase in take-home pay. And I think she was being sarcastic. She was like, I'm pleasantly surprised. Like, I'm not going to say no to more money. But he said, quote, a secretary at a public high school in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, said she was pleasantly surprised her pay went up $1.50 a week. She said that will more than cover her Costco membership for the year. And he shared an Associated Press report about paycheck increases under the $1.5 trillion tax overhaul. And so he pointed to this as a success of this tax reform. I'm a little speechless.
So here's my quick analysis. Paul Ryan's, first of all, probably doesn't tweet.
Right. I mean, it's his staff. I get that.
Yeah. Right. However, I feel like Paul Ryan, he was doing a town hall, I'm sure, or somewhere in Pennsylvania. but he's not even from Pennsylvania. No. So what the fuck was he doing in Pennsylvania? He probably heard this story, or somebody heard this story and then regurgitated it to him.
Right.
He regurgitated that to somebody. So the
social media manager.
Social media person and said, post this, and then didn't realize what was going to happen because Paul Ryan obviously doesn't shop at Costco.
Right.
Because a Costco membership, which I have.
Right.
Because I love Costco.
Me too.
But it's like $60 a year or whatever.
I mean, it's not a lot.
Right. Like you could do that, I guess, per paycheck. It wouldn't cover your $60. It would barely cover your $60 Costco membership and maybe a couple in something like small.
I think.
Like the ice cream.
Like the ice cream. Like get a Froyo while you're there.
That swirl ice cream is so good.
It is good. Well, actually, one of my favorite pieces of social media that Sarah has ever done for Hellbent was in response to this. She put on Facebook, and in response to the story, she said, "What could a banana possibly cost, Michael? $10? Paul Ryan, probably."
Right.
Because he, you know, it's a reference to Arrested Development and this like out of touch socialite who's never paid for anything. So she's like, yeah, a banana is $10. But the point being is that he does not understand how money works and what things cost because he doesn't have to worry about it.
Right.
And so for him, he truly believes that $1.50 a week is exciting. I'm not shitting on money.
Right. But why? Okay. So Nancy Pelosi. So Paul Ryan tried to attack Nancy Pelosi the week before for saying that workers are getting crumbs.
Right.
$1.50 is the crumb.
It's the crumb.
Like it's literally, I mean, I'm sure she could have said something better. Like, you know, Americans are not receiving, like she could have spent
some amount of different. Right. They're not
seeing the returns that corporations are seeing that they're getting back in.
Well, and not only that, the top 1%, according to an analysis of the bill by the Nonpartisan Tax Policy Center, that middle income taxpayers will receive an average tax cut of $930. And those in the top 1% would receive an average of $51,000.
That is the salary of the person taking the $930.
Exactly, right. Exactly. So she could have said they're not seeing these gains. Paul Ryan is so out of touch and pushed this ridiculous tax policy through. And he thinks that this is a positive ramification of that tax policy.
Again,
he thinks
a situation that I don't understand where Bernie Sanders is.
Right.
Where is he on this
situation? Because this is just so completely indicative of everything that the Republicans didn't understand about tax policy.
Not even just Bernie Sanders, though. I mean, I'm seriously talking about this group that really fucked us in the 2016 election. Like, where is, what the hell is that name of that group that Bernie Sanders oversees?
Our Revolution.
Revolution. Where the fuck are they?
Right.
Yeah. Like, what are they doing?
I don't know.
Are they not giving this information to their supporters? Because I don't see a single Bernie supporter talking about this tax plan.
Right.
And railing against it.
Right. And for someone who wants universal health care, which would raise taxes significantly, maybe you should weave in some tax policy with that.
Which, by the way, did you see Donald Trump tweet about earlier today how Britain is under like they're protesting in the streets because of their national healthcare system? And then like John Corbyn and the rest of the Britons are like, nah, bro, that's not how it works. We're not going down that road.
No.
But again, if you're going to walk, if you're going to fuck us over and walk the walk, at least talk the talk
behind it.
But like later, like now.
Now
is the time to actually have these conversations, and not when Democrats, like while candidates are trying to you know, get support.
Right.
Like help them.
Yeah. Like here is a formally engraved invitation.
Right.
To fix this.
Right. But if they were not Bernie diehards, then they won't get the Our Revolution stamp of approval. All right, Devin, what are some of our action items?
Okay, so I was talking to Varsha yesterday. I love Varsha. Planning out the show. Oh, by the way, I updated our website. So now you and Varsha are actually on the team page.
I love
it.
I saw it. I love it.
Thank God it needed an update. But anyway, I was talking to Varsha yesterday in our production meeting. And I was saying that I didn't really have a good action item for everyone. There's not a ton that feels very actionable with all this memo bullshit, except call your representatives, tell them you think they're asshats and or that you like what they're doing. But she told me about something that Lauren Duca is doing.
Love Lauren Tuca.
I know. So she on Twitter, Valentine's Day is coming up. So Lauren Tuca is snail mailing Valentine's to people who donate $50 or more to PPACT, which is Planned Parenthood's fundraising arm, under Tucker Carlson's name. So Hellbent is going to take a page out of Lauren Tuca's book and do the same thing. So if you send us your receipt for of a $50 or more donation to PPACT in the name of the anti-choice politician of your choice and mail it to us, you will get a beautifully written and signed Valentine from Hellbent headquarters. Nice. Which I have excellent handwriting. So.
I have really good handwriting too. Yeah. I'll write some out.
Yeah. So, and plus, if the person that you pick is particularly creative, like in honor of, if it's particularly creative or makes me laugh, I will personally kick in another $10 to PPACT.
Nice.
Yes. So think about who you'd like to make a donation in the name of. Tucker Carlson's a great one. Paul Ryan's missing spine.
Devin Nunes. Traitor.
Yeah. Traitor, whatever. Send us your receipt for $50 or more and your address, and you will get a Valentine's Day love card from us.
I actually still, to this day, go to the store and get the box Valentine's.
Me too, I love them.
And I give them to coworkers.
Me too, I love them, because I have to do it for my son's class. Yeah. So I always give them to my friends, because we always buy a ton.
I know, those are the good days.
It's so nice.
It was so simple.
Yeah. So that does it for us, Drexel.
I loved it.
I know. I loved it.
It always happens so fast.
I know.
We could do this all day.
We really could. We really could. I'm the one who has to cut us off when we're like in the middle of a good conversation.
Yeah, she cracks the whip, y'all.
I do.
She gives me the death glare and she's like, shut the fuck up,
Drexel. Moving on. So I just want to remind everyone that you can follow Drexel at DrexelHerd on Twitter. And you can follow me at Devin Handy. And you can follow Hellbent at HellbentPod. And you can also follow us on Instagram at HellbentPod, where we update our Insta stories, and it's really fun.
Check it out.
With cool stuff. So that is it for us. I will see you back here on Thursday with a very special guest.
Bye, guys.